Hi there. This is PT McNiff from the Long Take Review podcast, and you are listening to the Rebel Base Card podcast. Great pull, kid.
I'm going to clean you out again.
I don't know. I'm feeling lucky.
You've seen the show, and like us, you have questions.
Ooh, that was a good one, but try this one on for size.
No question should be left off your list.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got a crazy theory, but hear me out.
But you better have some spares.
Oh, that was one of mine. All right, let's do this instead.
With me, as always, is my friend and Card Squadron winger.
This is Greg Cass, a.k.a. Ion Cannon.
We've recorded at home and across the U.S.
Last summer, we were from the Boston Common. This week, we're in Chicago.
This is day three of celebration.
The show has had many names, but the purpose is the same. Let's share some time at the table.
Ding, ding, it's time for breakfast.
Welcome to The Breakfast Pack, a Rebel Base Card micro podcast series. A returning Star Wars insert podcast series that asks more questions than it answers. Today on Breakfast Pack 69, I don't want to hear any comments about that, we're asking questions on Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 5, The Return, that aired on Disney Plus Wednesday, March 6th. With me again at the breakfast table is my partner in crime, Card Squadron Ringer, and fellow Star Wars Unlimited card buyer Gregory Cass from IonCannon.com. Greg, how is your decks looking?
I have a Director Krennic deck I made at a sealed tournament last week, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. I'm going to boost it up now that I have some actual boosters and some rare cards. But Director Krennic Yellow worked really well for me if anybody's looking to build one.
I'll probably end up pulling off of these boosters like a bunch of like K-3PO or the White Hoth, you know, protocol droid that buys it. And all the card says is like, a character just dies in your deck for no reason at all. And you're like, all right, well, why did I get three of those in my deck? Anyway, but also at the breakfast table today, we have PT McNiff from the Long Take podcast. Shh, we're barring him from Jen. We snagged him and Greg, basically, from the Oscar Prep Marathon show to sit in today and throw out some questions. PT, thanks for not being on an Oscar podcast for the moment, but you guys have put in a Herculean effort, you, Greg, and Jen both, of covering what is a massive Oscars, you know, prep, whatever you call it. I can't be the Long Take, but I'm like, it looks hard.
Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here. It's going to be very strange saying something to the two of you, and it's not actually just at my headphones or at the speakers from my car. You could actually respond to what I'm saying in response to you. I don't know how I'm going to handle that. But yeah, we're as of this recording, we are 2 days away from the Academy Awards. So our podcast with One Eye Always on the Oscars has had five eyes, probably. We've had one eye on Dune or between the three of us. But the rest have been on the Oscars. So it has been a lot. The real Herculean effort, of course, is Jen Bankard, who is just killing it, who organized it, as we were saying sort of before recording. Greg took half of the categories, and Antonio and I took the other half, but Jen was there the whole time, and shepherding us and making sure we didn't wander too far away from the topic any given time. But yeah, it's you know, we're down to the wire. The predictions are out. The envelopes are sealed. We're just waiting to watch Ryan Gosling sing I'm Just Ken, and then figure out how many awards Christopher Nolan's leaving with.
See, and it's like, you know, we had Jen on the group chat earlier, and it was almost like, oh, party at Jen's place on Sunday. Everybody's like, we're all going to fly out to California and just show up. And she's going to be like, oh, I didn't mean that literally, you idiots. But no, that's what I also like is that, you know, like, and I think this year again, like seeing like Greg go through and he's like, I'm going to watch all the movies. And, you know, when you listen to the Long Take, read the Long Take and whatnot, I mean, like, this is not like, yes, there are hot takes, but I'm like, there's a lot of, you know, going through all these movies and a lot of the categories, not just sort of like the, you know, the ones that like a layperson like me would be like, oh, hey, they're doing that one. So I think it's a very fair and balanced podcast with a lot of great opinions on it. And I think when you're watching the as we kind of talked in our sort of like kind of like covering the batch episode, you know, there's a lot of buildup to it. And some of these other award shows and everything like this, it all is connected and it makes it a much larger picture than what you're, you know, what you, the common person would kind of think. So I really kind of dig like the process y'all are going through. Thankfully, I don't have to record all that because, you know, a lot of people sometimes think some of my shows go long enough as it is, but I'm like, wow, now I don't really feel guilty about keeping Greg around because, you know, he can really... You guys can show up and like drop like 2 to 3 hours. I'm like, what? This is nothing, right? And I'm like, wow. All right, my hat's off to you. But anyway, I know that PT is joining us for the first time. But if you in the audience are joining us for the first time, hello. This is an insert series podcast in the regular feed where Greg, PT, and I are going to trade questions to each other that we have not talked about before. We talked about too much other stuff, which means. Kind of like a fantasy draft. There's a chance we could swipe one another's question. And tonight, that's going to be an issue just because the layout of this particular episode. I will remind you, though, that if you haven't seen The Return, this is a warning that there's going to be spoilers for this show. So if you haven't seen it yet, we invite you to come back, please, and listen after you've watched. And just interestingly enough, how this recording date, you know, because the recording dates sometimes slide. And so I found myself this week, and maybe... Greg, you were the same way in PT, where I was listening to podcasts as we kind of get ready for to do the Greg's List here in a minute on episode 4. And then I was doing a recording with David Motters, you know, covering for Aaron Harris on Star Wars Reactions on episode 5, that after a while I got confused on like, what show am I going to be talking about on Friday? And so I kind of had to watch The Return again. For like a third or fourth time, just to remind myself like, oh yeah, this is the show that people are actually, this is the one I'm going to be recording and editing and producing and putting in my feed. So you better know what is on your damn show. But anyway, I don't know like about you guys, but that was just like too much batch, all in the wrong place. But anyway, for this contest of questions, there are no points, bonuses, or lightning rounds. Greg has the cheat sheet, but he's got a kind of a trademark on that, or watermarks every time I try to swipe it off the net. But there is something we like to call the Greg's List. Now, this is a selection of podcasts and other assorted media that we ingested, just like I was talking about, to see if they answered any of our questions or had some really great takes. It's one of my favorite parts of the show because it highlights just some of the amazing work being done out there in the community. We hope you check out some or all and maybe find a new content creator you would like to follow and support. Now, PT, I'm going to put you on the spot here, but I am curious, what's in your playlist, and did you hear anything on the previous episode, which I am just, wait a minute, what was the title of the last episode for? The Return.
A different approach.
Edit point. No, I'm not. I'm gonna let you know. I don't care. Was there anything that you had a chance to ingest or listen to on a different approach that you thought was pretty cool or a show you just want to shout out that's not us?
Sure. I mean, this makes me feel like an honorary Greg to be able to put something on the Greg's List. So I feel like this is no disrespect to the Bad Batch because usually I'm right on top of it, but because it's the opening of the season is overlapping with the run up to the Oscars and the release of Dune Part 2, which I don't think this is the last time we'll be referencing Dune Part 2
no, in the conversation no.
about this episode. So, you know, there's it's been a little patchier, but just in terms of shows, I mean, my number one is, of course, the Rebel Base Card podcast. They do a special insert series. So that one, and then the ones that I feel like maybe don't get talked about as much here, which because you guys would share them frequently. I really like Sky Talkers, which has two. I think you guys, people may know this one, but that is two hosts, Caitlin and
Charlotte.
Charlotte, thank you. Who are prequel generation, prequel kids generation. I feel bad saying that. I think they're in their like early 30s now. But you know, when I was listening, I was like, oh, they're like in their mid 20s. They're just out of college and really excited about the prequels and then the sequels. But they have a very sort of English major mindset of like, let's talk about the text. Let's talk about the themes. Let's talk about like the dissecting some of the words and terms that come through from the titles of the episode through recurring bits of dialogue. I really like listening to their responses to these shows. I think they're doing a every other week one, so they did the first three, you know, that came out all at once, and then they just put out an episode for A Different Approach and The Return, so I haven't listened all the way through yet. The Force Center podcast does a really good job of having enough time and dedication to put an episode out, usually by like noon or like mid-afternoon Pacific time, the day after it drops at midnight, or the day it drops. So, you know, by Wednesday midday, if you're you've watched it and you want something right away, the guys at Force Center are there for you. I know it's
and usually with like 2 hours they're yeah. run long. They do an awesome job, but yeah,
that ain't us.
A long one.
That ain't us.
And then you know, the one that like this is only because this is my first time adding something to the Greg's list, I'm gonna throw this is more of a classic because they're not active right now, but there's a podcast called Force Material, which is I think out of Australia, which those guys haven't been doing, you know, recaps. They're, I think their life took over and they've sort of put it in the closet for now. But I would recommend going through their archives. They are all about the influences on Star Wars, like the material that fed into Star Wars. And then that's looking at the new stuff that was coming out, but also the classic Lucas influences. And they had some just really incredible deep dives into you know, some of those adjacent things and the stories that fill the stories that we love. So I'll just shout out that one.
No, that's a great podcast. Yeah, I really miss not having them more regularly, but yeah, it's like with anything else, it's like life gets in the way. We know that too well. Good solid list. Solid list.
Thank you.
Yeah.
How about you, Dr. Cass?
Let's see. So just a quick one. If people are not following Molly Damon on Instagram, she is half of Star Wars Explained. But as they do their reaction show, she's doing drawings for the episode, and they are so good and so funny. And so this week was Batcher. I believe the phrase Batcher was saying was, "We be digging," which made me laugh so, so hard. And you know, anything Star Wars Explains puts out is great, but Molly, I didn't realize Molly was so talented an artist, you know, on a whiteboard, it appears to be. And so really fun little cartoons. The one I want to shout out this week is a funny one for me. So it's HoloNet Marauders, and they are some really nice folks here in the Boston area. And they are famous for me because I have been desperately trying to meet them at some Star Wars event, and we constantly don't find each other. You know, they are very active in the 501st. And so it's hosted by two men and one woman, and one of the men and the woman are a couple. And I tried to find them at Star Wars Fenway night at Star Wars night at Fenway last year, could not find them until they appeared on the Jumbotron in costume. And I was like, there they are. I should go track them down. But I basically we have this ritual where we both go to the same Star Wars things in town and then text or DM each other on Instagram being like, oh, shoot, you were there. Oh, me too. We should have found a way. So determined to meet them, but they put out a good show. Like Skytalker's a little more kind of prequel and after generation, which it's nice to balance your diet with that kind of generation's perspective. The woman who's a host, her name on Instagram is Jam the Jedi, and she does awesome cosplays of every kind, but especially a hunter right now that is just so good. And I believe the last convention she went to, she was handing out flyers that said, "Have you seen my daughter?" with pictures of Omega on them. So really killed it. And so I recommend their show. I recommend her feed. And I believe there's Boston Kylo and Slob Vanth are the three hosts. And they all do great cosplay and are really cool, interesting fans. So get them on your list. I had a super stressful week at work, so that's all I managed this week. But we'll get back to it next week. It's spring break right now, so I'll listen to everything next week.
Yeah, I think it's probably a good time to start banking those things, because I know I've got a long trip back to Florida, and good chance to kind of review all that Oscar predictions to see who was right and who was wrong. And then like the following show, the next show, the long take is going to be like 10 minutes like, huh, well, that didn't go the way we wanted it to go. And then it's like, good night, folks.
Oh, that's so funny. You think it'll be 10 minutes. It's definitely going to be 2 hours. It's going to be us sitting down being like, this is fast. This will be 35 minutes in and out. And then it only ends because Jen is looking at her clock, realizing she needs to go to bed because her family will wake her up in the morning.
No. Yeah, this week it was kind of funny because, like, I think I started off, Tom Gross, I think, was on Coffee with Kenobi with Danzy and Mason. Always get a nice chance to get those three back together. I did Star Wars Reactions, David and Aaron, and then was on Star Wars Reactions this week. Thank the Maker has kind of been a staple. I think I kind of picked that up from Greg, and it's just a solid show. And, you know, those guys just get to do everything and go everywhere, but they bring the goods. One thing you talk about, like you mentioned with Force Material, one podcast I'm happy to see back is Geeky Bubble Podcast, kind of that mother-daughter combo, and the names are escaping me at the moment, but they're awesome. And I know that they took a break, and then it kind of came back a little bit starting around January, and then they've kind of been picking it up, and so it's kind of fun. I like to play off the two, and I mean, like, it's kind of funny because, like, you know, with Dan and Mason, you have father sons, there's other father sons, you got Colby Cast, where you got, you know, father and son, and so this one you have daughter and mother, and so it is kind of nice when you get, you know, family involved with Star Wars, because mine has pretty much jumped ship a long time ago, so that ship sailed back, but it is kind of fun to listen to some other families talk about Star Wars. And let's see, and of course, you know, the Cantina Cast I always kind of like because Jonesy and Albert really always bring the goods and good folks. So at any rate, alrighty. So the Greg's List is done. Now later on, PT, we will be interested to know the segment after we get done with the questions. We are going to give our Pringles can ratings, and that'll be out of 10. So keep that in the back of your mind. As
long time listener, I'm prepared. I've got my Pringles can.
This is how you get back on the show, folks. All right. So, since you are a guest, you get to throw out the first question tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Exciting. Okay, well, I'm going to go to the end of the episode. You know, I think we were sort of kicking around the, like, how many questions are there based on, like, what happened? But I think this was a really, like, strong character-driven episode of sort of, you know, how they're realigning themselves with maybe, well, whatever. We may be other things to say about it. But so my question is, are Hunter and Crosshair good now, or is there more that they have to do to heal?
I'm going to call this a steal, even though it's not really the same question, because my first question of the night was dudes and feelings. Am I right? I think you're right to say this is kind of one of those classic episodes where if they just talked and worked through their feelings, it would have been a very short episode. We could have taken care of this quickly. I don't think they're done. I think this was a necessary episode to slow down and make sure that it wasn't just immediately back to normal. You know, the kind of very literal symbolism of Crosshair putting back on his old outfit that they saved and all that. Like, it could have been skipped over, and I think that would have really been a mistake. But at the same time, I think it's not done yet. I think because it all worked out, everybody's feeling good. But I think it may take another few episodes till they're really back in sync with each other and connected in that way. So as I said last week, I said, should it be will it be a hug or a shootout? And well, we don't know actually what happened, but it seems like maybe neither. And maybe one of my two options would have been a little faster to get it done. But I'm going to say absolutely the heart of the episode and the most enjoyable part for me that you're speaking towards. And I'm going to say we have a little more work to do before we're really a well-oiled machine again.
I'd almost disagree, but first I want to call out, who thought after being a prisoner for 8 months that Crosshair wasn't going to fit in that armor? I mean, unless they have like a little like outside, you know, where he's sitting there pumping iron, I'm surprised that, you know, he wasn't rattling around inside that armor. He's sitting there like, girl, like, no, dude, this is not like, you know, you haven't been out of there. You haven't been like, you know, putting on weight. at any rate, but I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, I would almost say kind of a side swipe, because I was like, who was more passive aggressive in this episode? But I may have to request answers for that. But I do think that for the story, you know, there are times where we're like, we were all amazed that they got Omega out of there and Crosshair early so that they get this part of the story. I do think the fact that they gave this an entire story, and I was very happy that they did. As was saying on the reaction, kind of in a very Bad Batch way, it's like not everybody gets to go through conflict resolution with a big snow worm. There's, if you have the bingo card, the Doom bingo card, there's the first worm. So I'm going to spot you, B3 worm. But I do think that it'll probably get back to more of the early Bad Batch, you know, before Crosshair kind of went rogue, where I think he's still going to be kind of sniping a bit at Hunter, but I think that's kind of like what they did.
Sniping. Yeah, very, very nice.
But I think it'll be more kind of like what they did before. I don't think they are, you know, like it was going to be interesting. Like, are you going to really sit down and talk about your feelings, or are you going to try to work through something? But I think for the most part, I think it's past. And I think that, they'll just kind of move on, because I think we're getting to another part of the story. And I think that, you know, we've given enough time for that. But what do you think, PT?
I think that's interesting that there's you know, two divergent kind of takes here. Cause my hope is that, Greg C is right, but I kind of think that Greg M may be right, in that, you know, this felt like, it did feel like a breakthrough. I appreciated Omega in, you know, she did refer to herself as like sort of the older sister at one point, or at least that the Crosshair was her little brother. And she was very much the, why don't you just talk to each other? Like, why don't you just have a conversation? The very wise and astute thing, which these dudes don't want to do. And so they, you know, men will literally fight an ice worm instead of going to therapy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like the way that they did talk. It felt realistic that they sort of hit a point of reconciliation that was very heavily centered on nodding and kind of vague statements that were just sort of about kind of, well, like, I didn't know what was going on. It's like, no one knew what was going on. And, you know, that felt very real, that they wouldn't just open their souls. I wouldn't want it to just be, I'm hoping it's not going to be like, and that's that. And now they're back to their normal rapscallion ways of having, you know, divergent takes on things, but they're back to being brothers, especially because to your sub question about passive aggressiveness, I'm going to have to default it to Hunter as being passive aggressive, because Crosshair got aggressive when he was like, you know, you're mad at yourself. You're mad because you failed Omega. Like, I'm the one who helped her and you didn't, and you're mad about that. I feel like they have to, that now they have to have the tangential healing about that exchange now that they've gotten through the Order 66, you know, we went in different directions one. Like, now they have to heal the next section. But yeah, I thought it was well done, that they, you know, it felt very character driven. It didn't feel very telly. It showed, I think, their dynamic well. But I hope it's not fully just glossed over and then it's like, we're done, we're moving on. I hope there's more sort of bumps along the road.
Great commentary there. Couple things I want to pick up on. Greg reminded me, we're now a third of the way through this last season because it's 15 episodes. So that there isn't a lot of room as we tackle that question. And then PT's comments reminded me of that nodding at the end. And now I'm accidentally going into long take review territory. But there's a great Best Picture nominee out there right now called The Holdovers, which people should watch. I think it's on Peacock if you have the streaming service. And it's set in the 70s. And at the end of the movie, there's a reconciliation between two characters. And I got to hear the director speak here at the Massachusetts premiere of it. And he had shown, I swear this is going somewhere, he had shown the film to Walter Murch, who is an important figure in Star Wars history because he was there at the early stages of Lucasfilm, and showed the movie to him and asked him, like, did it feel like the 70s? And Walter Murch said, well, it did. And the most 70s thing thing about that movie was the fact that the two men did not hug at the end, that they just kind of worked it out and there wasn't a very like 90s hug. And that came to mind at the end of this episode. Like, I think the hug would have felt so disingenuous, mm-hmm. whereas the little like nod of like, yeah, like kind of a, I respect you, we're going to keep working together, really worked well as the emotional beat. So that stood out to me as well as just a really good choice in this. I'll jump in with my next question, which, you know, mine are so goofy tonight. So I'm going to ask it. Look, we had a really interesting dynamic because we are down a tech. And I think this was an episode meant to remind us that tech was an important part of this team. We get Echo, who can somehow fill in, and Omega clearly picked up some of Tech's training. So my question is, who is the like MVP now of this reconfigured Bad Batch, and why is it Batcher? Greg, your choices.
All right. I was sitting here like going, and all of a sudden you threw in Batcher. I was like, huh, what? No, of course Batcher is the MVP and all this, because A, Batcher can dig faster than Wrecker. You know, has a great sense of smell and incredible, you know, and like I said, you know, I think it's really called me right from my CWK appearance, where I was like, Hasbro, get on the phone, we need a Batcher, Gonky, Tupac ASAP. We needed it like yesterday in stores, because this hound is amazing.
But in what scale, Greg? Are we talking Black Series, Vintage Collection? Toy Tangent, let's go.
Well, I would say in this case, now I've been collecting retro when I can, okay. But I would say that the vintage looks much nicer, and I think I like it. I like it better than the Black Series, but I would say, you know, they're probably going to jump the shark and go straight to like the Hot Toys, or, you know, like one where it's like you get this like scale, like this big, you know, like you see with the big busts of all the characters and things like that, going, that's a deal breaker for my marriage right there if one of those things come home.
Yeah, it'll be a $200 Hot Toys Batcher or a Funko Pop, and that's it. That's the choices you got.
I can hide a Funko Pop. I can't hide a damn bust. You know, it's like, even trying to explain it, it's going to be like, because that's the same thing you're going to explain in front of a judge. You know that, right? You're going to be like, well, how do I split this into, you know, like, no, you're gonna be like, get the hell out of my courtroom. But I am stalling. But you know what? I almost think that Crosshair will end up being the MVP of all this, because I really like the groundwork they have laid. And who noticed Crosshair petting the hound, petting Batcher? And I'm like, that is a Crosshair that's been places, that's seen stuff, folks. but I think they have really laid a lot of groundwork over this entire, you know, three seasons to really get him to this point. And I think he is not the sniper he was. AZ's quick to point out at 53% accuracy. And I don't know whether that's getting worse or getting, or, you know, cause he's like well off your average. But I do think at the end, not only are we going to get, you know, I hate saying that we're going to get the redemption arc, but I do think that if we're going to get a hero's death out of this, I think it might be Crosshair at the end of it. I think he really comes through in a big way. So I think he's the MVP.
I mean, the fact that you mentioned that Crosshair has been won over and is petting the hound just underscores that Batcher is the MVP, I think.
Yeah.
Batcher even won over Crosshair. I mean, and
two versus one, man.
This may be a maybe a basic answer, but I think it has to be Omega. Like, Omega's the voice of the conscience in the Bad Batch. She's the one who's always like, we got to go back, we got to save as many people as possible, everybody matters, everyone counts. You know, it's Hunter is sort of nominally the leader, but when he's like, I don't know if we should have given Crosshair his gun back, Wrecker's like, well, Omega said so, and that's fine with me. That's all I need. Which is, you know, Wrecker's a simple soul. But I think that it's showing that, you know, Omega is the one who is out front, and everyone does sort of realize, like, she never had that soldier mindset. She never was indoctrinated in that sort of perspective of, I have to follow orders, I have to do whatever it takes, et cetera, that they've all been evolving away from. Crosshair now, finally. So I think that it'll end up with her being the leader. I also sort of feel like she's the only character where I will be legitimately, well, I guess, and Batcher, will be legitimately surprised if they don't survive to the end of this season. Like, I could see the end of this being only Omega and Batcher going off to a retirement planet somewhere and just laying low.
Gonky.
And
Gonky, of course. And Gonky. You know, waiting to emerge in Book of Boba Fett season two, which I don't know if that will happen, but...
They'll be off on a Glee Ensemble learning to play the Valacord, like Woody Harrelson never got to. So,
hey, if they show up on there, you are guest number one on Breakfast Bag, Boba Fett series, you know, series season two. And we're going to be like, you were right. The whole episode's going to be, you're right.
Well, I really like both of your responses. And part of what you made me realize is Hunter, I think because of the dramatic arc of the episode, Hunter was pushed way to the back and seemed childish in a lot of ways. He was also kind of on his back foot for a lot of the episode, especially with the longer action sequence at the end. He's just kind of the one imperiled. I guess... At the end of the day, this is for everybody, but it's also a children's show. So I think it is going to be that PT's right, that Omega's worldview, galaxy view is correct. And we are teaching kids the mythology of let's help everybody, let's leave no one behind. I thought in particular that she said that she wanted to go back and she left too many clones there was really interesting because that's... Well, that's playing to her audience if this were a rhetorical situation, right? And she's trying to draw them into this larger conflict to save Mount Tantus and to save these clones. So I like that a lot, even if I would kind of want her to have to realize she almost did last episode that the galaxy doesn't work quite as well as sunshine and rainbows every time. Well, just because we haven't talked about him, I'm going to go Echo because it was great to have Echo back. And it's great to know that Echo is seemingly coordinating larger units, right? Kind of playing a bigger game now. And I want to know everything about his ship. That ship design to me hit the right level of it, reminiscent of a lot of Star Wars video games, but I could not identify one it was actually from or, you know, a design previously. And I liked his kind of interrogation at the beginning in that he put together the mission and is clearly planning, you know, a bigger strike on Tantus. And that kind of makes me really excited. And it's nice to have, I guess it took leaving the batch to become the member who can actually think more beyond the, like, we'll have enough money for the next week and to really start to think about what they're going to do in this galaxy. So I'll go Echo. Again, mainly just to talk about somebody different. So, Greg, I think that makes it your question.
Oh, and by the way, Echo also has one of the best comeback lines in the whole episode when Crosshair goes, "What, no hug for me?" And Echo, like, without missing a beat, goes, "Depends on how good your intel is." And I was like, that is a strong piece of writing there. I thought that was good.
Which gets a smile from Omega, which is interesting contrast to something that we may get to later. But it was sort of like, oh, she thinks that's fun banter. She's like, this is a good dynamic between them.
He had some of the best lines. He had some of the best lines in this. All right, on a scale of the beginning of the episode to the point where Crosshair actually sees Mayday's helmet, how far did you make it on that scale before you realized we're on Barton 4 and we're revisiting a planet they've been to? Because I made it to the helmet before it really dawned on me, oh, we're back there. Then my eyes go open. But I could slough it off on the fact that, you know, I'm watching early in the morning on the mobile phone, which you really miss a lot of, and you can go back there, especially in an episode like this where there's gorgeous colors and shadows, and especially all the Pabu scenes are amazing. But it did not really hit me until basically he sees the clone's helmet. How far did you make it in there before, hey, we're going back there, where the outpost was from season two? This is amazing.
You know, the outpost from the outpost. I don't know. I may be off the scale because I forget the exact order. It took this base has been abandoned, and then Crosshair saying, that sounds familiar, for me to be like, oh, it's from that one with the guy and the other guy. That may have been after the helmets. Like, I just thought it was like, oh, right, yeah, he's sad about the clone helmets being just disposed in the corner. And then I think he sees the helmets, then he says that. And then he starts making, like, a scene later, he's making the little shrine that Mayday would make, which I thought was really good. And I think that also kind of Hunter seeing that was like, oh, interesting. Crosshair was always so crappy towards the regs. It was like, the regs, like, who cares? Like, we're special. And he was very dismissive of it. And so that felt like a very kind of quiet moment of Hunter realizing how much Crosshair has changed since they last interacted consistently. But yeah, I think I was off the scale. I think it took me longer than you, which maybe is because I have West Coast privilege and Night Owl privilege and no children privilege. So I watch these when they drop at midnight. Pacific time. Which does sometimes mean I'm very dumb when I'm watching them because I'm tired, even though, like, I stay up late, but sometimes I'm just like, wow, what a Star Wars thing. And then the next day I'm like, oh yeah, like this and that. And that's why it's good to watch it again when I'm fully rested. How about you, Greg?
Nice. Actually, I could be wrong, but you might be our first West Coast midnight viewer, because I don't think Jen or Colby usually do the midnight watching. This is just my chance to talk to Bob Iger, who's a regular subscriber of this podcast, and say, I really loved the Ahsoka 9 o'clock Tuesday. Like, that was a beautiful time to drop the episode for those of us on the East Coast. So I want that back. I suspect we'll get that for the live action, and for animated they're kind of like people will find it whenever. So let's see, I think I am probably about in the middle of your time, because it was the I don't think the creature has a real name other than Ice Carnivore, the bird that appears.
I just saw Ice Vulture.
That was the first time I was like, oh, there it is, because I remembered that the outpost, although I did not remember the name of the outpost till PT just made his joke a few minutes ago, that I remembered that episode ended as kind of the symbol of who you are, Crosshair. You'll always be alone and just circling and solitary. So when that creature reappeared, I was like, oh, all right, that's there. And I think it is about halfway in between those. I will then say, just because I'm bringing it up, it was weird that the Ice Vulture, I think, is just a bird, right? It's not anything. But Ahsoka has trained us to be like, what is it doing? Who is it? Is it secretly the daughter? Is it this? Is it that? So I'm like, what's the deal with the Ice Vulture? And I did not use that as one of my questions tonight, because I think it's just an Ice Vulture. And when it seems to point, I think they animated it. It's just the bird, like, stretching its wing. It's not actually, like, pointing a way forward. So that's where I ended up on the Ice Vulture.
Well, it's something when I went back and watched The Outpost, because even Mayday kind of says, you know, you have to kind of admire them because they're kind of survivors. And I thought that was kind of interesting in that. But also, yeah, I think in this case, it's a nice, it helps you bridge, you know, from the outpost to this, because it, like, oh, it's that callback. And if I would have caught that earlier, like, oh, isn't it buried? And you're like, oh, okay, they're trying to do something, idiot. But, you know, in looking back then, now you look at, like, you look at the base now, and it's like snowed over, because those sensors, you know, like, they were high in the air, and all the outpost was on, you know, kind of stilts and whatnot. And now it's all snowed in. And, you know, you kind of wonder, I'm like, all the worm had to kind of do was and knock that thing over, and you would have had a quick, I mean, that sensor must have really been, you know, it's sort of like, what's really stopping you? Just, like, reach out your paw and knock it over, and they're done, right? But at any rate, you know, sometimes a vulture is just a vulture. But I thought it was a nice tie back. And, you know, like I said, it's one of those, like, hey, we're making a callback. We're trying to be smart about this. Pay attention.
Yeah, it was. I also went back and watched The Outpost once, you know, I got it together to realize, oh, right, it's the same place, which is one of the best episodes of The Bad Batch, like an incredible episode that I was very happy to go back and revisit. And the one parallel I just want to note is there is that conversation that he has with Mayday about, like, yeah, the vultures, like, you know, they feast on death, and they'll do whatever they can to survive. And, you know, Crosshair silently, like a brooding man, is like, that's me. But I think that, you know, it's the last time we see it in the episode is when the was I think it's Lieutenant Nolan, unrelated to soon to be crowned best director Christopher, but Lieutenant Nolan being just sort of like, well, yeah, that guy dies because, you know, Mayday dies because we don't care. That's a waste of resources to try to save him. You know, he was a good soldier. Good soldiers die. He was expendable. So are you. You know, get your crap together and we'll or else. And then Crosshair like sees the shadow of the vulture because he's looking at the ground and he looks up and sees it again and then is like, I'm killing this guy. And he kills him. And it's a great moment of the episode. But that's the last time he's in his Imperial armor. And the first time he's back in his Batch armor is he's, you know, doing the fixing. I'm going to say, by the way, Greg, that he plumped up when he was just a fat Imperial assassin. He was living large. And then he slimmed down to his Bad Batch, to his Clone Force 99 weight. So that's, he was surprised that he kind of, you know, balanced back out. So he comes out and he's fitting into the armor, and it's the first time he's back in his old old gear and his old persona, and he looks up and sees maybe the same bird, but the same kind of bird, which, you know, it's interesting because it's like, is that what and this is not my question, but I'm, you know, it made me wonder, is the vulture supposed to be the creature he's afraid he is, or is it that he's aspiring to be better because he sees the bird? I don't know what the answer to that is. And again, I'm officially not submitting that as a question.
See, I tell you, you get anywhere near this podcast and you'll be talking about stuff you had no idea you were going to talk about. So we've left our mark. I think we have another round, and I'm really curious now how it's going to go. So, I think we get one more round of this, and I don't think there's anything that's off the table yet. So, let's have at it. Let's get the enjoyment of this last part of the podcast up.
I will note that our co-host and former guest Jen Subchakchai Banker did submit a question that I think was stolen enough. It was about like what's the gain of Crosshair going back to Barton IV, and I think we talked about that. Like that was enough. It was a sidecar steal from this. So my question is going to be, I want to channel the spirit of Chuck Knobloch and talk about Crosshair having the yips, and be like, what do we think is the end result of that? Of sort of his, you know, he's had a shaky hand for a while. What do we think that's saying about him and his transition? Where do we think that's going to go? Like, what are they setting us up for with him being down to the 50-ish percent accuracy rate?
So when I was a young boy, I bought one pack of not Tops, sorry, Greg, but Score baseball cards. Yes. And there was a Rookie of the Year card for Chuck Knobloch. And I thought I was the coolest kid in the world. So just because you invoked him and we're on Rebel base card, I have to note that I at one point possessed that. I lost it long before I could be sold to pay for my college tuition, which I'm
sure because you
is
tried
what,
to put it into a card box, but you missed and it just like flew out the window. That's
and
very
off,
on point.
Never saw it again. So I mean, it took actually back to Greg's question about like, when did you realize? Cause this has been going on a while. And it was this episode that I was really like, oh, this is a thing. Like we really need to watch this hand and his accuracy rate. So it feels to me like it has to last long enough for him to miss a shot and drama unfolds. And then maybe in the series finale, he will make one incredible shot that will kind of save the day and be there. So I think it's probably going to last a while. This might be his kind of season thing, just kind of simmering in the background. I will say, imagining him making a shot, it is hard to imagine something cooler than when he threw the mirror disc, which was not the outpost. That was the other season two Crosshair, and reflected it just right and killed the, I think he killed a rebel in that case. That to me feels like what it's going to be. Like the point is to show, I would say the dramatic point is that he's unsettled, right? He's still unsure of the direction he's going to go in, and it's only going to be when he's firmly set up to make his, I'm going to call it final choice, but I don't mean that in the sense he's going to die, but like his forever, this is who I am, this is what I'm going to be for the rest of my life choice. I think he'll finally be there. But good question. Greg, what do you think?
Well, I think it's very interesting that he brings up Chuck Knobloch, because we could say that Crosshair, you know, with the Empire slash pre-Bad Batch was Knobloch's Minnesota time when he was amazing. And then when he gets back to the Batch, it's kind of like his Yankees stint where he kind of sucked. And it's just one of those things where, or even go to the Royals. I didn't realize he ended his career with the Royals. But then again, not a lot of people also, because by that time he'd fallen off the radar. But I do agree that he's gonna come up Snake Eyes, not to bring in G.I. Joe. There you go. Dan, if Danzy had G.I. Joe on his Rebel base card, bingo card, there you go. There's that one. That's a tough letter to get. But I would say that, yeah, I think he's going to be disappointing us super soon. And it's going to be one of those things where, yeah, something's going to come up where they really need him to do something. And oops, I missed. And they're like, that's not what you do. You have a tattoo on the eye and all that. That's your shtick. Otherwise, I don't know. Give the man, you know. Crosshair is now kind of like me in like a one of those like shoot 'em up games where I can't go with a sniper rifle. You need to give me something with a lot of bullets because I'll get the job done, but I'm going to have at least 100 round barrel in order, and I'll dump it out completely. It's going to be messy, but I'll get the job done. But I think, yeah, other than that, you know, they're going to need to move like Crosshair to heavy weapons guy, because as a sniper, you know, he's not going to cut it, and it's going to be bad. And, I really hope we're wrong, but it's going to be like, ooh, yeah, you're going to disappoint somebody real soon. What do you think, BT?
All the things that you are saying, except for the part about Chuck Knobloch being on the Royals, is really sort of triggering like various thoughts. Cause I was like, wait, if Crosshair has to become the heavy weapons guy, does that mean that Wrecker has to learn a sniper rifle? And then for some reason while I was thinking that, you were saying it's going to cost them a lot. I'm like, oh, what if like Wrecker dies because Crosshair misses a shot?
Ooh.
Or what if someone is seriously captured or wounded? Yeah, that could be, you know, now I'm just fan fictioning the rest of the season. I think that, you know, it's maybe this is very obvious, but this is men can't talk about their feelings episode. It also could be men can't ask for help. And so it's good. You know, there was another Omega insight of, why don't you just ask the droid AZ? It can look at your hand and give you some medical advice. Like, no, I don't need that. So I think there's going to be something where it becomes a problem. He has to realize he can't just sort of be out on his own and doing whatever. He needs to actually ask for help and maybe be vulnerable in that way. And yeah, so it'll be interesting to see exactly how that plays out. But I'm with you guys. I think he's got to miss. He has to get to the point where he misses something important before him to acknowledge that, like, yeah, he's been sort of dealing traumatically with whatever it was, whether it's a direct injury from the toxins or if it's just, you know, psychological. But he has to respond to it. This is not, again, not a question officially, but is it a tattoo? I thought it was a birthmark, his crosshair. Like, I think, but I'm just putting that, I don't know. Or it also could look like a brand more than a tattoo.
I was thinking like a prison tattoo where you just like create scar tissue is kind of what it looked like to me, but I don't know for sure. I mean, just speaking as somebody who was in prison for a long time and definitely knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. How many tattoos did you get when you were in stir there, Cass? Is there a neck tattoo I'm not seeing?
I got to pull us way back because I don't think Greg knows this, but PT plays the role where Jen and I don't understand a sports reference and PT fills us in. So like when we were on the hot stove, we didn't understand what that meant. And then PT filled us in. And then when Jen and I went on and on in a podcast recently about what journeyman, like, why do people say that? That doesn't mean anything. And PT's like, hey guys, so everybody other than you two nerds knows sports. And here's what that means. And he was nicer than that. But so anyway, we got to back off the sports because I've been left out for the whole,
Greg, what member of the Bad Batch reminds you of Nomar? There we go. Let's bring it back to the Red Sox.
I mean, if we're talking a shaky wrist issue, it's got to be Crosshair.
All right.
Thank you. That was awesome. That was awesome.
A visual gag for a non-visual podcast. Exactly. As
that's what you come here for, folks.
Well, I'm going to cross one off my list because I think we've covered it, and or it was just a bad question to begin with. I had on my list, how did you interpret the title? And really, that was just a chance to say, Crosshair returning to the team, Crosshair returning to the planet, the team returning to themselves. Like, there's lots of ways return works. PT called it right, which is Sky Talkers will have that conversation probably better than we ever could. So we'll leave it at that. So
I didn't get to the point in the episode where they may talk about that, but I will say I thought about that question too. It's on my list, and it was in my mind. I was like, the reach of it is Omega insisting she has to return to rescue the other clones.
All right,
and everyone being like, well, like, you're free, so now we're done, and she's like, no, like, we got to go back.
Also, big Indiana Jones Kingdom of the Crystal Skull vibes, where the word return is a like third of the movie. They're trying to figure out what Howard Oxley means by return. But my round two question will be a little bit of a silly one, but something that I am determined to do more often this season is celebrate the visuals and the animation, because I think we often throw it compliments here and there, but it really is quite stunning. So this may seem silly and superfluous, but I will say, for the return or any episode so far, do you guys have a favorite visual of some kind? And to give you time to think, I'll just say, I mean, some of the characters have gotten great upgrades, some of the environments that we've been looking at, the action sequences, anything that really stood out to you this episode as something you really enjoyed?
I really enjoyed the dinner table conversation. One, that table did not look cheap. Yeah, you try to buy that. That's not something you're getting at IKEA. But I really loved it seemed like the sunset type shots on Pabu. I said that earlier. Just because I just thought the colors were stunning. And obviously you're going back to Barton Fort, where it's all like, you know, a barren wasteland. But I do think that I think the colors on this, and I think for the whole season, have been amazing. But I really thought that this was really a pretty episode. And also, I start to feel a little bittersweet, because I'm like, Pabu's going to get carpet bombed, isn't it? I think we better lap this up while we can, because I think, you know, maybe I'm worried about Batcher. Now we were already worried about the Batch, Omega, Gonky. Now I got to worry about Batcher. I'm like, someone's going to go. And I'm like, you know what? They're not making it off the island, as it were.
Maybe it'll just be those clone kids. We don't really care about clone them. Kids. We barely knew them. Like, but then it'll be really sad though if they go. I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna take that as a steal for a question I didn't really want to get to, which is it safe for them to be on Pabu? And I mean that from the perspective of Pabu. Like, why are you hanging out? Like, you, some of the most like searched for people are in the like surround, whatever. This isn't really a safe haven if you have highly wanted fugitives hanging out on the other side of a little archipelago. Anyway, I will say, I have two answers to Greg C's question. It's difficult. You're both named Greg. I don't know if you have pointed out to you. My favorite of the season is the end of the previous episode of A Different Approach, when Crosshair's has come down the ramp, and Hunter is it's Hunter and Wrecker and Omega are on one side and Cross is on the other. It's set up, it's framed, you know, it's very similar to the Kylo and Han standoff on the bridge with Finn and Rey up in the side of it's a classic standoff pose. And you know, it wasn't a shootout as was speculated last week on this channel, but it had those vibes, and the shot and the composition of it underscored just how tense the moment was, without it being sort of textually said. It wasn't like explained. It wasn't in the dialogue. It was in the setup of the shot, and I really like that. For this episode, it's simple, but it is the one that stood out both times I watched it. Is when they turn off the beacon, which of course, like, it was very obvious. Like, we'll just turn this beacon off, and because we need the power. It's like, well, that's going to be a big mistake. But the beacon turns off, and it's like the lights like just sort of, you know, wind down on the beacon, and then the camera just sort of shifted a little bit, and it wasn't a huge kind of like zoom in or a pan. It was just this unsettled like unmoored feeling of just floating to the side slightly to underscore that, like, oh, well, this was a mistake and something something bad's happening. It, like, you should feel uncomfortable because this camera is no longer tied in place. It's no longer doing a smooth, steady movement. It's kind of fading into the threat that's about to come.
I will just shout out Omega's new look. I really like that they're letting her be a girl now. Like, she's just a little more feminine. And, you know, I think as somebody raising a little girl, not that you have to be raising one to speak to the need for female role models, but it's great that she looks a little older. And, you know, the costume they put her in the Pabu scenes was something kind of really different and had a different texture, almost like a netted vest or something. So I really like that. And, you know, all the characters continue to be nicely kind of updated to get those extra action figures that we'll all have to purchase sometime. But they look really good, and it pays. To the conversation about Pabu, I was reminded of the first Deadpool movie where I believe Deadpool goes to the front door of Professor Xavier's mansion and is like, can I talk to some of the famous X-Men? And it felt like Wanda Sykes was just off screen so that they didn't have to pay Wanda Sykes for this episode. And we know we're going to see Fee, and played by the great Wanda Sykes again. I still haven't figured out why we got the woman,
Angelica Houston,
thank you for that one scene, is still mind-blowing to me. You know, it seemed like, well, let's not blow our budget and we'll catch up with Fee next week, perhaps, as the case may be. Greg, I think that means you get last question.
And I was parsing through what I had left, and I am surprised that we made it 55 minutes without too many other Dune references, because I thought, you know, like the fact they even put the worm, but they gave it the why, so it's like, you know. So on the one hand, you could get cheeky and go, was it a coincidence that a worm episode was put during Dune's commercial run? But the thing that this is less of, maybe it's a combination of question and comment, but I thought it was kind of so funny that they have this tablet and they keep, you know, moaning on about the fact that they're looking for schematics, but yet there's all this medical information. And I start to go, why isn't anyone asking, what are they doing to the clones? And I'm sitting there, I wrote that in my notes of like all caps. I'm like, give me a break. They seem like, what are they doing to your brothers, folks? At any rate, but I thought it was, you know, I for expediency, okay, move it along. And maybe they already kind of get that, you know, like, but I'm like, you know, we didn't get much out of Crosshair because, you know, Echo's like, do you have anything else to add? And he goes, it was just a prisoner. I'm like, what did they do to you? What, like, why isn't anyone putting this together? And why aren't they asking those kind of questions? But did that really kind of, did it bother you at all? Or is this something where you're kind of surprised that it seems like the question that wasn't being asked with the information that they were getting? Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. I guess I had assumed that it was like they grasp that there's the clones are prisoners and they're being tested on or tortured in some way. And maybe because tech's not there to be like, let's think logically and scientifically about what they may be aiming for as the end result of all of this, then, you know, that's another sort of tech-shaped hole. But I guess I assume they were just like, nope, bad things are happening. We need to go rescue the clones. Or just like, for it seemed like Hunter and crew at first was just like, ah, that sucks. Like, that's too bad for them. But like, but we got Omega back and that's good. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to sort of shoehorn in what it's not really a steal, but a tangential question, which was like, where was Rex? Like, why didn't Rex show up for this? This seemed like pretty big information that, you know, Echo is like, this is really important. This is really good. We need to know this. We got to figure out what's going on in this tablet and get more information about Tantus, because we are trying to, as was mentioned earlier, you know, potentially get together a large scale operation to rescue here. But like, not important enough for Rex to make his way in. Like, what are we doing? Which, you know, maybe is Rex is off doing something else. Rex has got, you know, similarly equally important work somewhere else, and Echo is trusted to do it. But yeah, I was kind of wondering of like, why isn't this like, why aren't we at like, you know, DEF CON 2 about this? Like, why aren't we ratcheting it up a little bit higher to see the threat that's happening?
I want to just confess what happened in my head, and I literally thought, well, they hired the guest star to do Echo, so they couldn't afford to hire the guest star to also do Rex. But of course, that is Dee Bradley Baker, who is doing half the voices and all. I'm sure all the creatures anyway, because he is Batcher, I think, has been confirmed. So that's not the right answer. I don't have a good I was trying to kind of figure out how I would explain it if I was the writer's room, right? And I wonder if maybe the answer is that Echo and Rex have already pieced together what's happening. Like, maybe they know the larger plot. It seems to me that there is the thing about testing for M count, but it seems to me that clones are ideal subjects for testing, right? Because they are genetically, you know, matched, right? And this is often what happens, you know, in real world psychology. Sorry, I'm stepping on Star Wars reactions territory a little, but they seek out twins, right? So like, this is kind of that same thing. Like, if they are, you know, genetically matched, then any differences have to be in socialization or whatever is why they do twins in the real world. And here it seems like, yeah, you can mess with clones. So that was my long-winded way to say, like, maybe they almost just expect this in some ways. Like, I imagine there was a lot of this kind of experimentation going on on Kamino. And, you know, we are told that this batch came about by accident, the bad batch, right? But maybe they are themselves the result of this type of testing, so it's not totally unusual to them. They should be asking that larger question. My best answer is that Rex and Echo are already on top of it, so they don't need to. But I don't really have a good explanation for it. I'm very interested in this iPad they have because it's kind of new Star Wars tech. And, you know, I think all of us walked away from Rogue One being like, it doesn't all work together, right? Like, these pieces and the, like, so it's a data tape and it's a transmission and it's a and that movie did the Lord's work trying to make that all the different language bits about the Death Star plans kind of flow together. And so I think this is a new version of that. And it's hard because, like, of course, in the 70s, they didn't think of an iPad that you put into a wall socket. It's, you know, kind of modern. I think, isn't there, I believe there's a famous Star Trek The Next Generation where they essentially predict iPads, except you needed one per document, right? So he has like eight laying on his desk of all the different reports or some such. And so it's interesting that they're kind of working this in and like, I want to call it an iPad, but it's like, how much is actually on there is the other question implied by your question, right? Like, could this just be like a list with some identifying information, or does it really give you like a full report of all the research that's been done? Seems like it's probably somewhere in between whatever the plot needs. Kind of like chain codes can be whatever the plot needs. But Greg, what are you thinking?
It better not have Find My Tablet on it. Otherwise, they are screwed. Because that's the first thing I thought. I'm like, of course, 13-year Apple employee here going, don't plug that thing in, because it's going to, as soon as it hits the network, it's going to, anyway. Yeah, it, maybe Rex was just at home trying to also finish Jedi Fallen Order like me, and not being able to get Cal Kestis past the ice slides that, you know, take me forever and my son to end up finishing. Yeah, I can't wait till Jedi Survivor ports over so I can fail at that too. I'm not bitter, totally not bitter, and I'll buy it full price when it comes out. I don't know. I thought it was kind of odd, because it was just one of those where I guess we're all kind of looking for those kind of questions. And I think it was Thank the Maker that came up with something that caught, you know, in my commute. I kind of went, ooh, when I started thinking about, like, you know, how are they going to use the clones, you know, with Project Necromancer? And you started thinking about, like, okay, last week we found, you know, like, we found out that Omega was able to pass metachlorians or M counts without degradation, and you're like, I think it was kind of insinuated that she could potentially be a host. And as soon as I heard the word host, I was like, ah, and I nearly drove off the road, because I was like, oh my goodness. And like, because I'm starting to try to, you're trying to piece together, it's like, how is this all going to work? You know, you can have, you know, Dominic Monaghan go like, science, you know, like, stuff only the Sith knew, and you're like, I want you to break out Session and explain that to me, all right? But maybe I think it's still that residual from Rise of Skywalker that goes, somebody needs to explain something to me like I'm a three-year-old, all right? Can you just break it down once? But that's the only thing that I kind of thought, at any rate. I got nothing.
I like it. I feel like when one of the things I was thinking when both of you were adding these great commentaries was, you know, why are they not
the show? It really comes out good at this time of the show, PT.
Oh yeah, well no, it was why are the Bad Batch not worried about this? It's like, oh, because they mercifully haven't seen The Rise of Skywalker, so they don't know what they need to be like concerned with explaining.
What the threat is.
So I feel like we've reached the end, and but because I'm a guest and because I've been so excited, and despite the assumptions there wouldn't be enough questions, I have two that I want to throw out that are like meta questions. One sort of about the season, and then one in the full-on irrational speculation zone. So the meta question about the season is, you guys talked about this in your preview, the last episode especially, but even in the three episode premiere, of a lot of things happen faster than we thought. Like Omega and Crosshair got out of prison pretty fast. They found Hunter and Wrecker and Gonki and the Tuukka doll all very fast. They reunited fast, and now Echo is back. And I know Echo maybe isn't staying, but I kind of was like, well, Echo's not going to show up till halfway through the season. And the parallel that you all had, and I had this thought as well, that's is sort of like Mando season 3, where it was how long is it going to take for them to see the Mythosaur and get to the waters in the mines, and they were like basically right away, and for that season, with all due respect, it was sort of like, ooh, like what do they have cooked up? Like, how much further are they going to take this story? Because they've like got to that part so fast. And then it was like, well, maybe they didn't have it all fully worked out. And it was a little meandering at times. So how are you all feeling about the arc of the season, knowing we are, what is it, a third of the way through, and we've hit a lot of the beats that we thought was going to take most of the season? How are you feeling about this?
I am much more confident about this than I was Mando. And I feel like animation just takes that much more planning. There's that larger gap between each step of the process. And, you know, I'm certainly not trying to make fun of Mando season 3, but like, if you want to quickly throw together a Jack Black, Lizzo, Christopher Lloyd episode, you can do that very quickly. And just, yeah, sure, he's got to go get a Gleep Glorp from planet Globa Globa, and there's your episode, and you can build it quickly. And I think Bad Batch is going to have a more concrete arc. I think for me, what's partially fueling that is it does feel to me like the crumb that was laid is, you brought it up earlier, Omega saying we have to return. So this isn't finished until they take down Mount Tanis, or at least free the clones from Mount Tanis. And I think it's the second episode, Wrecker says, last time we didn't have enough reinforcements and it cost us, right? We didn't have enough, you know, on our team. So I think for me, I'm still imagining that this next five is kind of Ocean's 11 style. Let's build a team. Let's plan the mission. Yes. Let's get, we're going to need an electro lock pick. Let's go steal that from a vault on Tangalore and on to whatever you need. And then, I'm just cheating just a little because the episode titles are all out. I really feel like the last arc is going to be like, let's go to Tantis and let's do this. So I'm feeling pretty good. I trust Brad Rao Jennifer Corbett. Thank you. And I think they're going to do a fantastic job bringing this home. Greg, what are you thinking? You look scared.
I am. And I think in some cases I worry. You know, I think there's so much more we want to know. And I think you could even go back to what Dark Empire and, you know, the Palp clones. And I think we got some of that in Mando season 3, where it's like, I want to know more. You know, like they could do themselves a lot of good by kind of bringing us more about where Palp's clones are at and kind of laying that ground. I mean, there's a lot of water that this series has to carry. And, you know, we've seen him. We've seen the last you know, like we've seen these Disney Plus series, they still kind of trying to figure this out as far as what's a good length, what's, you know, what's this or that. With The Batch, you know, you've had two solid seasons of, you know, X number of them. They're, you know, the same. That, okay, we've got the pacing of it down. I hope that 10 episodes is enough to give us, you know, what's going to be probably, you know, like the storming of Alcatraz and then, you know, this, you know, 1974 jailbreak, not to bring AC/DC into this. and then my future question will be, all right, great, you freed all these clones. What are you going to do with them now? Or where do they go? I mean, because Pabu can only hold so many. And if my prediction is true where that's going to get carbon bombed, like, where are the clones going to go? And how sad is it going to be? But I just hope that, you know, and then of course, what's Omega's future? You know, where is she in all this? So it's like, man, there's a lot that this show has to carry, and I'm going to enjoy it. I've really enjoyed it. I think the, you know, it's kind of nice now because in season three of this, it kind of reminds you of those late seasons, you know, in a Doctor Who's run where it's like everybody's comfortable. They know they've got the character beats down and you're just kind of enjoying the ride right near the end where it's like, oh man, now I can't, I wish they didn't have to go, but it's going to be a really great ending. And that's what I'm hoping that we're going to get with this. But, you know, it's just one of those where I'm like, I have a feeling that somewhere along I'm going to be, I hate to say unsatisfied, but I know that there's going to be stuff that there's going to leave out that maybe something else picks up. But I'm going to be like, I want to know all the answers, but I'm not going to get them. So I have to kind of temper my expectations that I'm going to get a great story. There's still going to be questions out there that, you know, one, two or three follow-up hot stove breakfast packs as we get right into Acolyte. We're going to be halfway through the Acolyte and I'm still going to be like trying to process the end of the Bad Batch. So spoilers for breakfast pack number, what, 84 or whatever, wherever the hell we're going to be at that point. Whoever's still doing the show at that point, but at any rate, but yeah, it's just, I really hope they stick it. And I hope there's enough there to go, yeah, I'm good. And then, you know, bright, shiny new toy, Acolyte. Ooh, look at that, squirrel.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident they will stick the landing. Like, I think it will be a good end to the Bad Batch. I don't know if it's going to give the answers to everything going back to the Dark Empire through episode 9, where we're just sort of like, how exactly did all this work? I think if they try to answer all those questions now, that's, you know, I don't think it will hinder the actual characters having a nice ending, but that might, you know, drag down the last few episodes. But well, your answer, Greg, I think carries well into my final question. Irrational speculation on an even more meta level. This show is going to end. There will likely be other, you know, Lucasfilm animation shows maybe going off into different time places in the timeline, different directions. But assuming that at some point they come back to the rise of the Empire, picking up the, in the way that the Bad Batch picked up the end of the Clone Wars, what do you want the next show to be? What do you, once the Bad Batch is done, what do you want the story to be about? And why is it about Rex and Echo funneling rescued clones and teaming up with Quinlan Vos on the path?
That would be good.
That's my pitch. That's what, it's not a question. It's all right. That's what I want the next show to be.
I, you know, Omega was always the unexpected part of this, and that's where I want to see this go. Cause I think we're safe to say she's going to be one of the survivors of the show. And they took somebody who I wasn't expected and kind of put her at the very center of the galaxy now. And so I really want to know how that continues. I have a lot of questions about essentially how we get from here to Mando, right? From Dr. Hemlock to Dr. Pershing. Like what happens in between? Because that's actually a big chunk of Star Wars time, right? That's like 30 years. And seemingly that the project stalled and needed to come back to the same spot. That sounds like a book to me more than a cartoon series or something. I'm going to honor the question, but taking a different direction. I just want them to lean more into Tales of the Jedi. I think an anthology series that does two or three episodes on different Jedi characters from wherever in the timeline is just so ripe with possibility that I'm rife with possibilities. I'm really excited.
Well, you know, on the one hand, it's like now you have this animation machine that, you know, what, it's a year between batches. So it's like they can really crank this stuff out. And so they can tell any story they want. I think I'm on board with with Greg here that I think there that is a good thing to mine. And you could also use that to do some High Republic stuff, because you could say, hey, maybe we'll take some Acolyte or somewhere around there and do that. Because we all remember Star Trek The Next Generation. Cool. Overlapped with DS9. Very cool. Started with Voyager. Don't at me. I was there. Don't at me. It really didn't grab hold. So I could see if they tried to do a series somehow, you know, they did a nice job of like introducing the Bad Batch in the last part of the Clone Wars. And you know, that kind of went off. And now we have this adventure. I don't know if we have another derivative work off this, that I'd be really curious what that story was. Not that there aren't stories to tell, but could you make it really stick? You know, I want to see more adventures with Omega, but I don't necessarily know if they would do it in this style animation. I'd really like to see Omega taken elsewhere and something else. I wouldn't mind even seeing live action Omega, because I think that would be super dope. Because I think she's got a lot more stories that I hope she make, like put it on our wish list of people we need to, like, we need this to make it out of this series. We need this. People of Pabu, sure. Yeah. You know, hey, you know, have an adventure with those two people too, Gonki. But Gonki and Batcher got to get out first. But I do think that there, I think you're right. I think Tales of the Jedi, or something along those lines, where or Tales of the Republic, I think is a nice way. If the Acolyte does what it's supposed to do and gives us that introduction and that opening that people kind of go, yeah, I want to learn more about that, then you've already got this machine to go, we're gonna make all these great stories and it's going to be awesome. And we're going to get some characters. Maybe we'll pick up some characters from High Republic and then all of a sudden now bring them to life and maybe get someone and D. Bradley Baker. and maybe he doesn't have to voice every character in it. We can get a bunch of characters and bring in Angelica Houston, because we paid, you know, she's still probably got some punches on her, you know, Star Wars Lucasfilm card that she can still use and get you that, or they have enough where they get a free session with her as a voice. Can you just say you're watching Disney Plus?
The pitch I heard was the continuing adventures of Batcher and Gonki, which
yes,
bestseller. Done.
To give Hasbro enough time to make that 2-pack so it can get into Target. And it doesn't have to be a black series, folks. I don't want to pay $30-$40 for it.
So sometime mid-2026, yes. They'll have a
celebration when it comes back to the States. Right. There we go, man. I'll be in line. Anyway, all righty. Are we ready to give our Pringles cans rating for this episode? PT, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready. I went with an 8.5. For this one, are we allowed to do 0.5s?
Sure.
I was so cocky earlier when I was like, I figured out my Pringles game. And now just realize that I don't actually know the scale as well as I thought. But I think there's points, right? We could do 0.5. 8.5. And it's, you know, some degree of room to grow, because there are those sort of peak episodes that happen across really all these Star Wars animated shows. But the first two seasons of The Bad Batch in particular, something like The Outpost would be, you know, gets all the way up to a 10. And this is so character driven. There was a degree of, it was just kind of a monster of the week in terms of like what they were fighting. I can't believe we got this long for me to say, we all know Shai Hulud, but do you know Ice Hulud? Which was my pitch for talking about the worm. But the character beats were very good. And this was an important episode for the characters moving on the board, even if the sort of the plot was sort of, you know, a standard, you know, one session FFG role playing expedition, but solid 8.5.
All right.
First of all, PT, of course you can do 0.5, because that's what I call a serving size of Pringles is 0.5 cans. So I think I went 8 last week, and I'm going to stick at 8 because I really want to save some room to go higher and higher. But I think PT called it exactly right from the start of this episode, that you need to slow down. And there was some action in this episode, but, you know, there wasn't a lot of plot. It was more about character. And I'm really glad they took the time to make this real, because I will say one of the things that I think those of us who love Bad Batch are going to miss about it is that we love these characters. And as much as I want to see big whiz-bang, pew-pew action, I really want to make sure that in this final season, we get as much time as possible getting to know these characters, because you never know when one might disappear, RIP Tech. So it's great to have a little time with them. So I'm sticking with 8, but I might amend that upward. I was feeling warmer and warmer as our conversation about this episode went on.
Well, I will take that. I'll take it up to a 9 because, A, everybody made it out of the episode, including Batcher and Gaki. But, B, I do like the fact that they gave some time for this, you know, this tension to kind of breathe and work itself out. Now, not every time are you going to get a big worm to fight to work things out. But I do like the fact that they gave some time for this. And it kind of reminded me of the, like, remember early on in the last season of Game of Thrones where we still really felt good about it, and they had that one episode where it's like it was the day, it was like the night before the battle, and you really had some great beats between these characters before it all went straight to hell. I think that's how I kind of felt about this, where it's like we are on the precipice where it's going to start getting really kind of hairy, but it was kind of nice where everybody was kind of working together and working things out, and some nice beats there. So I'm gonna give it a 9. You know, normally I'd kind of put that to where one of these big, you know, showpiece type episodes, but I would say they took it nice and slow, and there was a lot of subtleties. You know, Crosshair petting the hat, you know, petting Badger. That gets you a lot of room in my. I forget the metaphor. It's too late. It's good. It's good. That's what I'm gonna say. I'm gonna summarize. Like one of your students is like, no, I liked it. It was good because I liked it. And you're like, F. There we go. It's been a long time since I was in college and had to worry about grades. So anyway, all right. Well, as we kind of wind things down, and we know we've talked about the long take and all that, but one thing I like when I listen to the Long Take podcast is I like the heavy lifting that PT gets to do to tell everybody where they can find the Long Take. So I'm kind of looking forward to this, and I bet you could just do it on the drop of a hat. PT, where can they find you and Jen and all the Long Take goodness?
I certainly hope I can, because I didn't write any notes about the plugs at the end. If you would like to listen to the Long Take Review, which is a podcast with one eye always on the Oscars, we talk about the awards races, but also new releases. We sneak in sort of nerddom franchise stuff as well, new Marvel movies, if and when there are ever new Star Wars movies or Star Wars re-releases. We talk about those as well. That is housed at Jen Subchakchai Bankard's Substack, thelongtake.substack.com. On any of your podcast feeds, such as wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, you can look for us. The Long Take Review is the title of the show. That's Spotify, Apple Podcast, Overcast, YouTube. Anywhere you can find us, you can find podcasts, you'll find us. You can also follow us on Instagram and Threads at The Long Take Review. And you can follow our Letterboxd account, LTR Pod on Letterboxd. And you can search for the hashtag LTR Pod on there as well to see all of our reviews of the things that we are watching. We meeting mostly Greg and I, because we're sickos. We're always watching movies. And the other two are normies, not normies, but balanced people with balanced lives. Mm.
Right. Very, very great to have you on, PT, and I'm very personally excited just to get crossovers checked off my list. And so you're both invited to come talk about The Wheel of Time, some books you've never read or thought about. But if you ever want to come over to that feed, both of you are certainly welcome. I'll just roll into my plugs and say the coverage on Long Take has been really good for the last like 2 weeks. We did a really fun, we've referenced Dune a lot, but we did a Dune hype episode, and then we did a Dune 2 review episode, and we have feelers out to friends of the program, Greg McLaughlin and Ross Holliban, to do some Dune reactions again. So we're going to probably sneak one more Dune episode out, because as PT noted, we like to cover whatever movies are coming out. And if you're looking at your April and May calendars, it's getting rough, folks. It's going to be, especially April is very blank. And so we'll do another Dune episode and take a pass on Kong X Godzilla, the new empire. We'll see. But we're going to do a bunch of that. And people can find me online at Ion Cannon. That's EyeOnCannon. Talk to me wherever I am. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, no problem. And this has been great, because it's like, you know, it's like meeting Greg and then all of a sudden meeting Jen through Greg and I'm meeting PT through Jen. So what PT needs to do is start his own podcast, find another co-host. And then it's like this, you know, like this 6 degrees of you know, Dan's air, where it's like we can go like several podcasts out and they're all linked together. And then we are all like instant co-hosts for everybody. That's how this stuff works. Anyway, but if you folks out there have questions, and I want to say thank you for a lot of the great comments and all that. People have been very, very kind to tell us, you know, like give us a lot of good feedback. And it's always kind of fun because then it feels like we're talking to you and you're talking back. But if you have any questions, you can find the Rebel Base Card on the socials, Twitter, X, Instagram, Facebook, Hive on occasion, Blue Sky on occasion, at Rebel Base Card. All right, let's see. No, I wouldn't want to. I was like, I was looking at my text going, I'd like to have this go longer. No, I think we stuck the landing on this one, and it's been great to have PT on. I like it when we have new folks on, and then I think that kind of makes it, that makes a show like this more fun because, you know, there's, then you have to kind of fish for it. You got to kind of, you fish out your points. And so this is always kind of very surprising, and it's just been very, 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 very awesome to get to spend some time with BT. And of course, my buddy Greg, who will be back at some point, will be talking about Star Wars Unlimited.
I got some packs to go crack. Wrap this up. Come on.
There we go. Yeah. All right. Anyway, until next episode, for PT, for Greg, I am also Greg, and we're going to return you to your podcast playlist, already in progress.
This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.
That's it.